This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I am your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, and whoever put the B in subtle was, well, yeah. My co-host is John Pazin, co-founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese Grammar Wiki, Sinosplice.com, and is terrified of elevators, so he takes steps to avoid them. He actually lives on a second floor apartment. True story. Do you want to become fluent in Chinese? If so, then John and I have something to say to you. We're going to talk all about setting language learning goals, including factors that you hadn't considered, and give you concrete ideas on how you can chart a path towards developing the type of Chinese skills you envision. Guest interview is with Peter Olson. He was born in China, didn't learn Chinese till he was an adult, and now lives in Kazakhstan. Go look that up on the map. All this and more, let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner coming at you from Utah in the United States.
Howdy, I'm John Pazin, living in Shanghai, China.
All right, I'm excited for our episode today. And guess what, John? This is episode number 40. Can you believe it?
40 is a good number. Unlucky, but good.
Well, before we kick into things, we have a few reviews and even a listener question. I'll kick off one review. It's from Moses Kim. He says, hello, I just discovered your podcast a few days back and really enjoyed it. I've actually have read 3 to 4 of your Mandarin Companion books, but didn't realize you guys had a podcast. Keep it up. It's very informative, but also entertaining. Regards, Moses. Hey, thanks, Moses. We appreciate it.
Awesome. Okay, so I have one from AKR in Germany. This person says, amazing podcast. It's great to hear about all the struggles that Mandarin learners face and solutions that more proficient learners found helpful. I will try to incorporate a lot of your routines into my language learning. Greetings from Germany. Thanks. I'm glad it's helping.
Indeed. All right, and then we have one more. This is an email from Amy Harawati. And she says, hello, Jared and John. I love your podcast and have been following from day one, and was already a fan of John from being a subscriber of Chinese Pod.
All right, cool.
I have a question regarding speaking. Would preparing and writing down in advance what you are going to say before speaking help or hinder your progress? I have a very hard time speaking. Every time I have to speak on the spot, even when it's just with my tutor, I suddenly just forget everything I learned and unable to recall any words or construct any coherent sentences. So to avoid wasting so much tutoring time, just saying and ah half the time and badly constructed sentences the rest of the time, I asked my tutor to give me a topic each week that we can talk about in advance, and then I would write down part of the dialogue before the lesson. However, I then feel like I'm just reading instead of speaking, but it makes me wonder whether I would eventually be able to say these things spontaneously, or would it make my problem worse because I rely on these notes? I hope my question makes sense. Cheers, and keep up the great work both of you are doing. Amy. Well, Amy, that is a fantastic question. I really appreciate you sending that to us.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's actually something that I did as a learner too. Did you ever do this, Jared?
I have done that a couple times. I think specifically when I've gone to government offices to take care of paperwork and I'm like, I have to look up words and actually read out sentences of what I was going to say.
Yeah, I actually took it a step further. Like when I was planning a trip to the store in China, I would look up the words I need, I would write out what I want to say, and I would imagine scenarios like maybe they're going to say this, maybe they're going to say that. And I would do my best to anticipate what they're going to say, but not just one reply, like a number of them, like this forking possible dialogue. So I was really struggling at that time, and it helped me a lot to think through this, write it all down. You know, you're saving a lot of time by looking up the vocabulary and taking your time with the sentence structures. It does seem like you're relying on writing too much, but the actual work of looking up the characters, you know, the words, and figuring out how to put together the sentence, that work needs to be done. And so you're definitely saving time by doing it in advance. And the next time you make the same sentence or something similar, it's going to go so much faster. This is something I actually recommend with our clients that are doing online lessons. They know what material is coming up in advance, and so they can figure out what they want to say much more eloquently than they can on the spot. And when the time comes, they won't necessarily read that like a script. They might just kind of refer to it, but they've figured out the words they need. They've figured out the main things they want to say. It saves a lot of time and it really helps you.
You know, John, even I can relate this a little bit to just public speaking, like in English, right? I've done a lot of public speaking, and I can tell you when I have an outline, when I've prepared specific sentences, have my clear talking points, my presentation comes across much better than if I'm just get up there and be spontaneous about it. We talk about that, that happens in your native language. You take a step further into a second language. Absolutely. That can really help you a lot more. Well, we really appreciate the question, Amy. And if anyone else has questions for us, please send us an email at feedback@mannercompanion.com, or you can just visit our website and you can contact us through there.
Yeah, we really appreciate it because a lot of these questions are things that I deal with clients all the time, and I just don't think of them when it comes time to record a podcast. So yeah, we're happy to talk about these.
All right. Well, today we are going to be talking about goals, and we're going to be talking about setting specifically language learning goals. So we're going to go through kind of four basic steps that we're talking about here on setting language learning goals, as opposed to just saying, hey, my goal is just to learn Chinese. We want to break this down and say, hey, what does that really mean? And what do you really need to do to get specific and set some goals along the way so you can actually achieve what it is you want to do?
Yeah. And so just remember that your goals, they need to be actionable. They need to be realistic. They shouldn't be too vague. You've probably heard lots of advice about setting goals. So all of those hold true here, but we're going to be speaking more specifically about how all this applies to Mandarin.
All right. So for the first step, what we recommend is first, you need to assess your motivation. This comes back to that basic question of like, why do you want to learn? And you have to have a reason. If you don't have a reason, you're not going to learn Chinese.
There's like a lot of people out there that are just like, oh yeah, I want to learn Chinese. I just like it. If you can harness your curiosity and you're just really interested in the language, interested in the people, interested in the culture, and you just want to keep learning, that's a really strong motivation. And it's not like you have to have this goal like, I want to be an international lawyer, fluent in Mandarin, you know, talking, making my case in the court in Mandarin Chinese. You don't have to have a goal like that. But something that we've said before is that negative goals like, I live in China, so I guess I should learn Chinese. Or I'm Chinese heritage. My mom has been nagging me since I'm little to learn Chinese, so I guess I should, you know, like out of shame or something. Guilt, shame, these kinds of motivators are nowhere near as good as positive motivators like interest and fun and desire to communicate.
Absolutely.
Imagine you're that person whose mom really wants you to learn Chinese because, you know, your family's from China and you just don't really want to. But probably you've been resisting because your mom's been nagging you, right? If you do your own investigation into Chinese and into the culture, you can find your own reasons why it's interesting to you that don't come from your mom. Then those can propel you forward rather than your mom's nagging.
This is something I've encountered a lot as I'm working with schools who have Chinese programs or maybe dual immersion or something. Especially dual immersion can be a challenge because these kids, they didn't choose to be in the program per se. It's their parents, you know, in kindergarten or first grade decided to put their kids into a Chinese dual immersion program.
They're cruel, cruel parents.
But, you know, these are issues I've encountered in working with students. I remember one, I sat down with a student. I said, hey, look, you don't have to do this. You can drop out and do something you enjoy. And that actually caused him to introspect. And he actually ended up finding some of his own reasons because he was just kind of thinking, oh, I'm just stuck in here. My parents, they won't let me drop out, things like that. And then he came back like a couple of days later and he was now found some new motivation because he's like, you know what? I put the much time into this. I think I do really want to see this all the way through. And he had different ideas about what he wanted to do for career. And he thought Chinese would be a good complement to that.
And like using my own life as an example, when I first came to China, I didn't have a really strong, clear goal for why I wanted to learn Chinese or what I wanted to do with it. But the more I studied, the more that became clear. You know, like at one point, my goal was to get a certain HSK score so that I could get into a master's program. And then my goal was to improve my Chinese so that I could get into the program, you know, after the HSK. And so I have had goals and they weren't all there from the very beginning. They change. But if you're just constantly thrashing around like, oh, I'll do flashcards or I'll do that app. And you really have no idea why you're learning. It's probably worth thinking about.
Totally. And this is the bedrock. We made an entire podcast about this, just about how to find your motivation. If you want to go listen to it, anyone, you can go back to episode 19, how to find your motivation.
Yeah. And my experience reminds me of an All Set Learning client I've been talking to recently. And he really wants to learn Chinese. He's motivated, but he doesn't have clear goals. And his goals are like, I want to be able to speak fluently to people. And that seems like a very vague goal, like maybe not good. But if you think about it, that's something that you can really run with.
Which leads us to point two, is that you need to determine what it is you want to do with your Chinese. So it's like, what competencies? Really, the point behind this is you starting with the end in mind. So you envision yourself, okay, I want to learn Chinese, my motivation, maybe I'm clear about it, but what do you actually want to be able to do in Chinese at some point in the future?
Yeah, so to give a simple example with this guy in mind, he wants to be able to speak fluently to Chinese people, and then clearly he's got his own interests and things he likes to talk about. So that's how he can focus his studies. He also is not neglecting characters. He's reading. He read lots of Manner Companion books. And he's able to work towards reading materials that will then feed into these discussions that he wants to have. And, you know, that can enrich his understanding of China, Chinese people, you know, have lots of great communication. So starting with something vague like, oh, I want to talk to people, you can actually get a lot more specific and really find some good goals.
Yeah. So even if you say, I want to talk to people, we can just say, all right, who do you want to talk to? Are these people that are going to be you're going to be working with, some sort of business relationship, just friendship? Are you looking for love? We can also talk about, like, what do you want to be able to read? Because when we're talking about fluency in Chinese, it's not just conversation. Literacy is a very important thing. Now, I will say that a lot of people say, like, hey, you know, I want to be able to read the newspaper in Chinese. My common question I ask back, I say, well, first off, do you read the newspaper in English? You know, and when I ask that, a lot of people are like, well, actually, I don't really. I'm like, well, what do you read? And so when we start talking about that, then it comes out, oh, well, you know, maybe I'd like to just read some, you know, articles on the web, or I like to read out entertainment or whatever it is, social media posts, just being able to chit chat back and forth online. So boom, right there. Then we have a clear goal about, hey, what it is that you want to do when it comes to literacy.
Yeah, the newspaper thing is always suspect. Some people really are interested in international relations, current events, all that. They really do want to read what Chinese news outlets are saying. And that's fine. But I think a lot of people, they just use it as a default because they don't know what they want to read. I personally never really wanted to read the newspaper. But when I finally did, I was like, oh, man, what a letdown. So now I need to find something interesting to read.
Precisely. And the other thing, too, is like, what kind of situations do you want to be able to be in and be able to use Chinese? So do you say, all right, I just want to be able to handle like everyday life if I'm living in China? Or do I want to be able to like give a presentation someday in Chinese? Do I want to be able to have like phone conversations about, you know, business?
Yeah, and the nice thing about having these more concrete goals is that it's going to draw you out of just like the rut of just following along with a textbook course. Because textbooks are, by design, just very general. So they're not going to be focusing on your particular interests. So if you know what you're interested in and you want to focus on that in your Chinese studies, then you can't just follow a textbook. Now, there might be certain textbooks that align with your goals, but probably not a lot. So you're going to have to actively get out there and find stuff and, you know, really feed that motivation by finding material.
I also think that getting concrete with this, it gets you out of the fluency trap, where people say, oh, I just want to become fluent in Chinese. Well, what does that really mean? People ask me, say, are you fluent in Chinese? And I always say, well, fluent's a very relative term. And if your goal is just say, hey, I want to be able fluent in Chinese, then, you know, in your idea of fluency is like native-like Chinese, well, you may have that 10 to 20-year road, and that's discouraging, and you feel like, ah, I'm never going to get there, and so I'll just kind of, you know, maybe you lose motivation and you give up.
Right, but if you really don't want to have a bunch of conversations about literature or current events or certain things, then you can really narrow it down to what you need to focus on, and you can see much faster results.
So on to number three. So now you've assessed your motivation. Two, you've determined what competencies you want to develop in Chinese. Three, now we need to break it down into smaller goals and milestones, something that's measurable, something that's achievable. And this is important because this helps you know when you are making progress.
Right. And obviously, this depends a lot on who you are, where you are. If you're in China, it's very different from if, you know, you're not in China. But again, if your goal is, I want to read a newspaper, so you're setting your goal like, you know, years down the road, that's not going to be very motivating. So reading is a really good example of something that you can set intermediary milestones for. And guess what? That's where graded readers come in very nicely.
Woohoo! Let's just say your goal is to read the newspaper and you're a news junkie and political junkie. All right, let's say, hey, first, let's get you down to reading that little sample dialogue in your textbook or your program. Great. Let's then move you on to Manner Companion breakthrough level, 150 characters. Can you read one of those? Great. Go up to level one, go up to level two. Once you get out of there, there's some other graded readers out there. Let's get through that stuff. You keep going. Now maybe you're ready for an actual, maybe a novel. I don't know, something that's a little simpler or easier to do. And then maybe you're now ready for the fabled newspaper.
I also want to say here that setting intermediary goals, these milestones, is not just a matter of math. You can't just be like, oh, I read that you need 2,000 characters to read 98% of a Chinese newspaper. Therefore, if I learn 10 characters a week and we assume there are 50 weeks in a year, then in 1 year I can learn 500 characters. And therefore, in 4 years, I will be reading a newspaper. Like that's that's a very mathematical approach. But where's the cultivation of your motivation? Where are the rewards? I mean, numbers going up are a little bit of a reward, but I don't recommend this kind of very strict mathematical approach.
You know, John, one metric that they use for an extensive reading for learning English is the number of words read. One researcher found that, hey, reading a million words in English a year equated to a study abroad for 1 year. So we don't have a lot of research on this regarding to Chinese, but, you know, that is something, hey, you may want to track. Count the number of characters in a line and then just kind of estimate how many might be on a page and a chapter in a book. Well, you could use that and say, oh, I think I estimate I read like 10,000 characters this month or something. And then let's see, can we boost that up?
Yeah, so you do want to have a growth mindset, right? It's not just like, if I can't learn 10 characters in a week, I'm a failure and I might as well give up. You want to make sure that you're always learning. And it can be very useful to have numbers. You can see that you're doing reviews. You're not forgetting the words because you're using Pleco or Scritter or Anki. You know that you're retaining the words that you're learning. You're reading more and more. That's great. So numbers are good. Don't get me wrong. It's just that if you're not using those numbers to accomplish new things, you know, like reading a book, then it can feel a little bit empty. I think there are some people that are motivated purely by numbers. And just as long as they're learning those 10 characters a week, they're happy. But the other thing is, if you know, if you're not integrating the characters and the words you're learning, then you don't want to be in a situation where you've learned 2,000 characters over 4 years and now like you realize that you can't actually read anything because it doesn't make sense because you haven't been practicing. So make sure that if you're using numbers to motivate you, that's okay, but you just want something else on top of that.
But John, I'd also like to throw out some suggestions to people that they can keep in mind. There's some goals that I have made before and goals I've heard other people making. One guy, he said, hey, I'm trying to have 5 conversations a day in Chinese. Now, he was in China. I mean, it was a little more doable for him. But maybe if you're not in China, you could say, hey, I want to try to have maybe 3 conversations a week, right? Or I'm purposely going to go to the Chinese restaurant or the Chinese market or whatever it is and try to do a transaction in Chinese, right? So those are some little goals that you can make along the way that can help you.
So those are great examples of growth goals. Like you're not saying how you have to do it in the conversations. You're not saying that you have to make the guy think you're fluent. You're just saying you have to have the conversations. And you have faith that if you keep having those conversations, you're going to keep improving. And yeah, that's great.
Now, our interview today is with Peter Olson. And Peter made this goal after being in China for a little bit that he was going to only speak Chinese for a solid month. That was a cool goal. I really admired that. But I've heard other people making some goals like that too.
Yeah, that's cool. That's kind of a different kind of goal. It's not like that in itself is going to fix your Chinese or anything. But if you're having trouble staying focused, then it can definitely give you a little shot in the arm. One other thing I want to address is the HSK as a goal. Because sometimes when I ask people, well, what are your goals for Chinese? And they say, well, I want to pass HSK 3. And okay, that's fine. But why do you want to pass HSK 3? And sometimes they'll say, oh, I need it for work or school or something. Okay, so yeah, you got to pass it. But if they're just like, oh, yeah, I just think that's a good goal. Well, what happens after you pass HSK 3? Then just HSK 4? It's maybe not the most motivating thing because that's a test. It's not really going to help you communicate. Maybe by studying for HSK, you can find some other interesting things about the language that kind of suck you in and keep you moving forward. But I find that the HSK, if it's your only goal, it's like, okay, you got to start, but you want to keep working. You want to keep looking for something else.
Yeah, and that HSK goal, I have talked to a lot of people. That is their goal. I get 2 stories on that real quick. One was from episode 24, The 4 Types of Tone Mistakes. We had interviewed Matthew Armstrong for the podcast, and he's an English teacher who's living in China. He said that he passed the HSK 5, but he's like, I'm clearly not HSK 5 level. You know. And then the second example is that I had some email exchanges with a listener and a reader once, And he said that after listening to our podcast a little bit, he originally had a goal to pass the HSK-4, but afterwards he's like, you know what? It's not important. He gave it up and he's like, no, I'm actually going to more pursue conversation. I want to pursue proficiency, not just passing a test. And this also highlights something that I had heard at the NCLC conference, the National Chinese Language Conference, in a presentation. And this guy, he was talking about the AP Chinese exam and the HSK test. So he pointed out that the AP Chinese exam, which is an exam for high school students in America, is more qualitative, while the HSK test is more quantitative. And it made total sense. I wasn't able to actually delineate that before till he said that. But yeah, HSK is more of like, learn these characters, learn these words, learn these structures, and you take a test on it. Whereas this AP Chinese exam, there's no word list for it. It's more of like, how well are you able to forming ideas and actually conversing and writing, expressing your ideas and reading? And so it was very different concepts in the test. But I also throw that out because the HSK, it's, you know, John, you've got gripes about it. I've got some gripes about it. If you got to take it, you got to take it. But I don't think it's a good learning goal.
Yep, I totally agree with that. So what we do sometimes is if we have a client who wants to kind of be a HSK 4, but they don't necessarily need to take it, then we'll reference the vocabulary and we'll bring in, you know, the grammar and make sure that everything gets covered. But that doesn't mean you have to spend all your time doing practice tests. Because if you want to score a good score on the HSK, like the person who said he passed HSK 5 but isn't HSK 5 level, you know, you can do that by doing lots of practice tests. It's much more preferable to reference the vocabulary, reference the grammar, get an idea for the difficulty of the reading, and work on it in ways that are actually interesting to you. And so you can kind of meet those goals and surpass them. So if you ever have to take the HSK, that's no problem.
So think about this point three again, of just about breaking down what it is you want to accomplish, the competencies you want to develop, and breaking it down into these smaller milestones. It could be just completing a class. It could be completing a textbook. But as we said, there's a lot of other ideas saying, hey, you know, I want to have X many conversations. And when you actually achieve it, you're like, oh, I actually had a conversation where I felt comfortable, or I laughed in Chinese the first time, or I told a joke and the other person laughed. You know, but there are things like that where you can say, hey, look, I did this and I feel like now I'm making some sort of progress.
Yeah. And remember, you're in control. Like, no one said you have to use the HSK as your goals or that you have to memorize this big vocabulary list. Don't get stuck in that rut.
I got to say, John, one goal that I did have along the way is my goal was to be able to encounter a word in conversation that I didn't know, ask what that word was, and then have the person explain it to me in Chinese and then understand it. And so when I finally got to that point, that was actually a big step for me. It was kind of a breakthrough point where I was like, oh, if I never spoke English again in my life, I know that I could at least get by in this language.
Yeah, and that's actually a goal that we have for our learners is use Chinese to learn Chinese. So if you have a teacher who keeps using lots of English, like, stop doing that. Transition to using Chinese to ask about Chinese. Learn all the words you need to ask about, you know, the words that you're learning, and stop relying on English.
And then the fourth point is set a time frame. So we have some ideas about what you want to accomplish with your Chinese. We are now breaking it down into smaller milestones. But hey, let's put a time frame on some of these things. Maybe it's a course that you're going through and you say, hey, I want to complete this course within this amount of time. You know, having those Chinese conversations we did bring up, maybe you have X many conversations in a week or in a day.
Yeah, you got to be careful that you're not setting goals like, oh, I have to learn 100 characters every week, because it's just not realistic. And sometimes you don't know what's realistic. So those kinds of number-focused goals aren't helpful. But it could also be things like, I booked a flight to China, and I need to communicate while I'm there. And I've got this destination where I know not a lot of people speak English. So like, that can be super motivating. And then working back from there, you can set lots of intermediary goals for things you know you need to be able to communicate about.
I love that, John. You put in some sort of like no turning back, right? You know, you book that plane ticket and you're just going to go. And so you know you've got to do something within this time frame.
Yeah, compare that to like an upcoming test date, right? The motivation is so different and it's so much more interesting. Like, it's hard to imagine being in China if you've never been there. But, you know, when you suddenly realize like, oh, I don't know how to ask where the bathroom is, like, that's motivating.
All right, so guys, just reviewing these 4 points again is number one, assess your motivation. You need to know why you want to learn Chinese. Two, you need to determine the competencies you want to develop. You need to think with the end in mind, okay? Three, break this down into smaller milestones so you can know you're making progress and you can set achievable goals along the way. Four, set a time frame. Put time frames, smaller time frames, longer time frames on these different things. And also, you need to be flexible about that sometimes because life happens.
Right. And one final thought is that sometimes when people are trying to think of goals, they have trouble coming up with them because they're kind of shooting themselves down before they even, you know, try to fly. It's like, I want to be able to speak fluent Chinese. They can't even bring themselves to say that because they don't think it's possible. So one thing that I find is useful is I ask someone who's working on setting their goals is, what would you do if you woke up tomorrow and you suddenly could speak fluent Chinese? What would you do? And if you can think of something that excites you, well, then you're onto something.
Words of advice from a man who knows. All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And our sponsor today is...
Manner Companion.
Today we are talking about our breakthrough level book, Xiaoming, Boy Sherlock. That's right. Sherlock Holmes was once a boy. And this is a book about when he was a boy solving mysteries. Now, I'll just give you a little background on the name Xiaoming. On all of the Chinese elementary school textbooks, Xiaoming is always like the model student. You know, he's like, he knows all the answers. He's that kid you want to slap in class because he's like, you know, super smart and knows everything.
Xiaoming is also a main character in Chinese jokes. So being familiar with this name as a name is useful vocabulary in itself.
We have three mysteries in this story, and we can't really give you the secrets of the mysteries because you're going to have to read it for yourself, and we don't want to blow the book for you. If you are about at 150, 200 character level, you should be able to start, you know, getting into this book. And I'm telling you, first time you can read a book in Chinese, it is a big deal.
And all of the characters in our breakthrough level stories are contained in our level one stories. Like, we don't go outside of the framework at all.
If you can get on 5 breakthrough books, you should be able to glide right into level one. So you can go out and get it today. It's Xiaoming, Boy Sherlock. You can find it on Amazon, iBooks, Kobo, or wherever you get your books. Okay, now we got rants and raves. John, what do you have for us today? Do you have a rant or a rave?
Actually, Jared, I have to think about that. Why don't you go first?
All right. So I have got a rave today. So during the National Chinese Language Conference online, I was in contact with a teacher. Her name is Rebecca Yu, and she's from David E. Owens Middle School in New Milford, New Jersey. And she said that her students loved our books, and she uses them in the classroom. And she sent me a video that her students made. And she took the first chapter of Mimi Huayuan, The Secret Garden, and her students, well, two girls acted it out. And they made this little video, like the intro to the story. And it's kind of depressing, the beginning of the book, because like her whole family dies of a pandemic and everything. And they were speaking the dialogue from the book and everything. And it was really, and there was like some voiceover, and it was like, wow. She's like real sad walking around. And, you know, it was really cute. And so I just got to give a shout out to those students. So Yu Lao Shi, if you want to let your students know that, you know, hey, they're awesome. And, you know, you guys can do this. Anyone can do this. You know, you can take stories from a book and act them out and speak Chinese and stuff. It's a lot of fun. So anyway, that's my rave today.
All right. I have a rave today. So last Friday, we adopted an adorable little black puppy. She looks kind of like a Portuguese water dog, but I doubt it's a Portuguese water dog. It was easy to get the impression that the Chinese don't care about animals. Like, animal rights isn't a thing here, but there are a lot of animal lovers.
I love dogs. They taste great.
Yeah, that joke gets a little old. The lady that runs Furry Friends, her name is Rose, and I think she has a full-time job, but she has like a full-time second job finding homes for these dogs and cats.
Well, John, that is so cute. I just cannot wait to meet Sophie when I'm back in Shanghai.
Do you have a family pet, Jared?
Well, we have a baby. So that's probably good enough for us right now, but our kids have been saying, hey, we want a dog. So maybe one of these days we'll get a dog.
Adopt, don't shop, Jared.
Adopt, don't shop. You got it.
All right.
My name is Peter. I'm a software developer And I'm working on a website called Dong Chinese.
Peter and I ran into each other at the online National Chinese Language Conference that he heard about from our very own podcast.
He was like, hey, I've listened to you before. I know your name.
It was Yuan Fun, or Fate.
I was born in Jinan in Shandong province. I didn't stay there very long. So when I was 6 months old, my whole family moved to the U.S., and now I'm living in Kazakhstan.
Peter not only has an interesting story, but I believe the undertones in his story is an example of what a profound impact a parent or other dedicated individuals can have on broadening our horizons and allowing us to explore and probe our interests for cultures and language. Stay with us. Okay, so I've got to ask, of course, the seminal question. Why did you decide to start learning Chinese?
I was born in China. I didn't know any Chinese growing up. I knew like, hello, thank you, and like maybe my name, how to count to 10. But other than that, like I couldn't have a conversation in Chinese or anything. But I always felt a little bit guilty. I'm a Chinese baby. I need to know Chinese. I need to know something about China. So after I finished university, I decided it'd be a good time to try to reconnect with my roots. And so my last semester at university, I just decided to take the Chinese course.
So I want to know a little bit, like, did you carry any memories of China?
I don't have very many direct memories, although we actually did go back once for a couple months when I was six. Like just some children's songs, like, you know, I knew this children's songs, Liang Zhi Lao Hu, like it's about the two tigers. Right. It's kind of a weird song, you know, like they have random missing body parts, like missing tail, ear, and like about giving a police officer a little coin you found on the street.
Well, all right. Well, then, so you finished this class, but now you're off to China. Where did you go?
I was born in Shandong province, so in Jinan. So I went to the same city. Like the first place I went was the same city where I was born. I usually tell people, like, if you go across the lake from South Korea, it will be in that, like, province there. And, like, a good friend of my father from when he lived there, like he picked me up from the train station, took me to his house. I don't know. It was a little bit embarrassing for me. Like, I don't recognize this person, but this person like remembers me from 20 years ago.
Wow. Like,
you know, he's asking questions about my older brothers and sisters. Like they all had their little Chinese nicknames. So he'd ask me, oh, how is Riri doing? How is Pingting doing? So this guy who met me at the train station, he was before an 11-year-old boy, but now he's a 30-something-year-old professional working at a technology company. And so he invited me to work at the same company that he works for in Qingdao.
Wow. What were you doing?
Maybe you've heard of it before, Hisense or Haixin. They make a lot of things like appliances and TV, but they also do like refrigerators and washing machines and stuff. I was like in the smart home, smart TV department. So we were working on like this chatbot. You can talk to the TV like, I want to hear a song by this singer. I want to watch a movie by Liu Dehua, and then it'll find it for you and show it to you.
Well, Peter, I want to know, like, you went to China now after just with like one college class of Chinese.
Right. I mean, that was definitely not enough, right? So no matter how incredible your one semester of Chinese is, like, it's it's not going to be enough. To go to work every day, we had to ride this bus. I spent that time, like, studying HSK flashcards with spaced repetition on my phone. I did an hour and a half of that every day, you know, while I was on the bus. But I still felt not very confident in Chinese. And so kind of like a New Year's resolution type of thing. Like at the beginning of the next year, I decided to give myself a little bit of a challenge. I decided for 1 month, I'm not going to speak any English.
No English.
No English. Just
wow.
Like, if somebody talks to me in English, I'm not going to respond in English. I'm going to answer in Chinese. And if they're persistent, I'll tell them I'm Russian. I don't speak English. Like I'd actually done something like this before when I was 14. Like my dad sent me and my siblings to Guatemala to learn Spanish. He told me, like, if you don't speak any English for the month you're there, I'm going to give you $50. And I learned a lot of Spanish that way.
Well, I'm really curious to hear how this worked out. But before you get into it, like, how long had you been studying Chinese at this point?
It was basically one semester plus about 6 months of living in China. Only
so
Chinese.
What happened?
In that month, I'm not sure my Chinese level increased that much. But the biggest change was my attitude and like how confident I felt speaking Chinese. After forcing yourself to do that, your mind just kind of switches into a different mode. Before, if I was talking to somebody who could speak English, like I would speak to them in English because it would be a more efficient method of communication for both of us. But after establishing that habit, like it kind of made me more willing to jump into a conversation, actually start talking with people. You know, before I was a little bit more timid, like kind of scared to start talking to somebody, like more scared of making mistakes, scared of people not understanding me or me not understanding them.
Now, you say you feel like your Chinese didn't like really improve, but it was your confidence. So, but how did that help you afterwards in progressing in your Chinese?
Right. So, I mean, afterwards, it kind of carried on. It was more interesting for me to have conversations in Chinese than to have them in English. It was more of a challenge, almost like playing a game. Like you get a little bit of a rush of adrenaline, like, oh, I'm doing something that makes me feel accomplished.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Well, I want to hear, like, what kind of happened? Because you went on and you've really progressed in your Chinese, and also now you're in Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. So like, what's kind of happened here?
So I don't know, kind of an unrelated story in my life. I also speak Russian.
Oh, you do?
Yeah. Like,
Where did you learn Russian?
When I was 17, like some friends of my family that lived in Ukraine, like they invited me over, and then I did a study abroad in Moscow. And so I was looking for language partners, you know, to practice Chinese, practice Russian. And I found this girl who lived in Kazakhstan. She spoke Russian, and at university, she was studying Chinese. And so I thought, perfect, we can practice Russian, we can practice Chinese together.
And you got married.
And we got married. Yeah, we're married now, and I'm living in Kazakhstan. Yeah.
That's hilarious. You know, Peter, I think one interesting thing I've heard throughout this story, how is Chinese continue impacting your life? And how do you see that being a part of your future?
In the future, you know, I'd like my own children to experience China. And now I'm developing a website for learning Chinese.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about that.
As I said before, like I did the typical study flashcards, memorize words. And like I always thought, like there has to be a better way to do this. Like it shows this word to you, like the word 错, like 不错, 我错了, like, you know, mm-hmm. It means wrong or mistake. But if you look it up in the dictionary, it will have all of these weird meanings, like to inlay with gold or silver, to interlocked, complex, jagged, like all of these. But like when you're studying the flashcard, you have no idea, like, which of these meanings is the most common one? Like, how is this word actually used in real life? I wanted to make something where you could see the context of every word that you learn. The website I built, it has a big collection of sentences. And for every word you learn, it will search for sentences that you can understand that use that word. And you do little exercises with that so that you can see how every word actually is used in context.
Yeah, well, context is the key for input, you know, and that's, right. I mean, that's obviously a big thing we believe here at Manner Companion. That's why we do the books, right?
So, right, exactly. I never really read a longer book in Chinese. Like most of my reading came from like, you know, short WeChat messages and reading mm-hmm. signs, looking at the menu. And like I had tried to read books in Chinese before, but it's a pretty frustrating experience. I can read about 90% of the characters in the book. And like for somebody who's not familiar with what that means, like 90%, that sounds like a lot. Like, oh, you can understand almost everything, but it means like every 10 words, there's a word there that you don't know, you don't recognize.
If I create an example of like a story, it's like, okay, so Stacy went to blank and where she blank the blank and later came home and had a dinner with her family. And you're kind of like, I understood 90% of that, but I have no idea what happened.
Usually the least common words, like the words that you don't know, like they're the most likely ones to be the important for the content. So like the first book I ever read in Chinese, like it was like this little adapted book, not for people learning Chinese, but for Chinese people learning English. And like on the left page, it was English, the right page, it was Chinese. I gave up pretty quickly, like the experience I told you about, like every page looking up a dozen words and trying to figure out what it meant. And then I came back to it about a year later. And this time, if I come across a word I don't know, I'm not going to stop. And I read through the whole book that way. And that was the first time I kind of figured out, oh, this can actually be kind of enjoyable reading a story. But then like I came across the Mandarin companion books. They're perfect. You don't have to make that sacrifice of like, I'm just going to skip over words I don't know. And the longest book I've read in Chinese was a Mandarin companion book.
Maybe Great Expectations.
I remember, yeah, like I just went through it like in two sittings, basically. Like one day I read the first part, one day I read the second part. Like I just
wow.
zipped through the whole thing. Like this, that was the most enjoyable and the longest amount of Chinese I've ever read in one sitting. It's so different from like reading torture. It gives you a big feeling of accomplishment. Like I finished a whole book. In Chinese, it's an amazing feeling.
Wow, that's awesome. I remember the first time I read a book in Chinese, I was doing like cartwheels and backflips.
Uh-huh.
It's more than just sample sentences. You have like long strings of text, paragraphs, chapters right. of stuff with context.
Right.
So Peter, tell us like if you could go back and give yourself advice when you had first started learning Chinese, what mm-hmm. would you tell yourself?
Like one thing is it's going to be a long journey, like no matter what you do. Maybe don't worry about HSK word lists or flashcards. I think talking with people is also one of the most important things for learning a language. So I would say like at the beginning, try to chat with people more. It's not difficult to find people who speak Chinese. And most of them like are pretty open to practicing with you, talking to you in Chinese.
Yeah, I think so. And I think even for anyone listening, you could even make a decision saying, hey, I'm going to only speak Chinese in my Chinese class or with my right. tutor. I'm not going right. to speak any English, right?
Right.
Well, Peter, I thanks so much for sharing your story with us, your insights. I think it's been really interesting to hear your story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, kite flyer, watermelon eater, truth seeker, water painter, trash picker upper, and that one gal named Jacqueline. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at mannercompanion.com. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is James Harper. I'd like to thank our guest, Peter Olson, and of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Paston. See you next time.